News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Hello.
Sunday, the 3rd of August, Anno Domini 2008, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 9 minutes after the hour, we are August already.
Yeah.
That's just astonishing.
Isn't it great?
That's why we got to talk later about folks definitely getting signed up for Second Life. And
because we're not going to be on the air for 11
weeks. Next month. It starts. I mean, the football season starts next month. They're already into training camp right now, and September is when the regular season starts, and that's literally weeks away, folks.
And as so many of you already know, we are going to be preempted for 11 out of the 15 or whatever it is.
11 out of 16 weeks
of football.
So, and it's very
sporadic.
We're
going to be here.
We got to publish the schedule.
Right. We are here on the web. We'll be here in the studio on the web for the first hour.
Webcast.
Yeah, see, you didn't know any of this, did you? This is all new to Rob.
Well, there's more to this.
We should tell this to Rob how this works.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that I haven't heard anything about it, and I'm pretty sure I wouldn't know what to do if we did it. So there you go. If, you know.
The theory is, what we were told, is we'll be on the air on the web for the first hour, live here in the studio. We can take calls and do all that stuff, but it'll be only on the web. And then we're done. So it's just a 1 hour on the web thing.
And then we're trying to decide which... Hopefully, before the end of this show, we can decide on a time slot for Sunday of when we'll do the second hour.
Right, whether it'll be we'll stay here and be on Second Life immediately for another hour, or whether we'll do it at home on a Sunday night, or whatever, whatever. We'll figure it out.
You know what? That would be a good poll for our listeners.
Yes, it would. Remind me of that.
Ask 300 people, get 300 answers.
Email me that.
All right, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Or what's more important, sound bites or a sporting event? You know what I'm saying? And you could take that to management and say, I think the show should be live, forget football.
Yeah, because they'll do that. They'll look at about 300 answers and say, well, that's certainly more important than the Bills.
I think their reply back would reference something like something very warm freezing over.
You can't say that. I got the beep button over here.
That's why I said something warm freezing over.
Right. But there's more to this to be considered because there's the 16 weeks of the regular season, then there's playoffs, and
it's
the Bills.
A minimum, right? It's a minimum of 11 weeks where...
They can choke at the very end like they usually do.
Yeah, they'll be in the playoffs. That's right. That's how that'll work. All right. I want to start with the poll of the week, and I'll repeat it again later for those of you only tuning in for the second hour, because this is pretty big. Frontier has decided to implement a 5 gigabyte monthly bandwidth cap for all of their residential DSL users. According to an updated acceptable use policy, Frontier now declares that any monthly usage above 5 gigabytes bidirectional is an unreasonable amount of usage. That's certainly going to be good news for Time Warner Cable, at least temporarily. They're apparently cooking up some low bandwidth caps of their own. From the Frontier website, and I quote, customers must comply with all Frontier network bandwidth, data storage, and usage limitations. Frontier may suspend, terminate, or apply additional charges to the service if such usage exceeds a reasonable amount of usage. A reasonable amount of usage is defined as 5 gigabytes combined upload and download consumption during the course of a 30-day billing period, unquote. As with most companies who try to justify low caps, the carrier's marketing department attempts to make the absurdly low cap sound reasonable by measuring the cap in terms of the amount of emails a user can send, which is 500,000, the number of web pages you can view, 35 to 40,000, hours you can spend playing online games, 350. Here's a tip to you marketing department folks. This tactic only makes us think that you think we're incredibly stupid. Those of us who run sites with pictures or who like to stream music or video will find ourselves running out of 5 gigabits pretty danged fast.
A day.
And changing services.
Exactly.
Well, that's
not going to do you a lot of good because Time Warner is talking about capping as well.
If Time Warner were smart, they would have a higher cap. And if they were really smart, they'd leave it the way it is.
Well, I don't know. I'm sure they have good reasons for putting the cap on. I'm sure Frontier has good reasons. They're just not reasons I'm going to agree with under any set of circumstances. I want to specifically thank good Soundbites friend Jerry Seward, who we still have to get back on the show, and John Link, both for passing me these.
Now, they snuck this in.
This information.
Basically.
No, it's not a sneak. It's what they do. They, you know, it's one of those, we reserve the right to change our minds anytime.
They just gave Time Warner more ammunition to
I'll say it. Well, yes, those incredibly smug commercials.
Yes.
This is grandfathered into existing customers.
Right.
I love how their website says, you get free 5 gigabytes of internet usage per month.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
And now what I've got to find, and I just thought of this this morning, of course,
didn't have time to think of it.
We need some sort of program.
Right. We need a utility to watch how much your computer is uploading and downloading to see how close you're getting to that 5 gigabytes.
Right. And we got to find it for Windows, Mac, and Linux.
Yeah.
So we'll be looking into that. You can do it on your router. You can tell how many packets have gone through.
Yeah, I was looking at that on my...
And the average packet is about a little over 1,500 bytes. So if you had said 1,600, you'd be good. But then you got to remember to add both the receive and the transmit packets.
And you got to remember to zero it every now and then. I just looked at my computer, and I've got 1,251,000 received packets.
Right. Now,
since
multiply
when?
That by 1,500. Right.
Right. Since I turned it on last, I'm guessing.
Right.
And since I never turned this computer off.
Right.
I won't tell you how much bandwidth I use, guys.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because you're uploading the soundbite show and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Time to start making that a smaller file. Do less. Make it smaller.
Well, I do more to make it smaller.
Well, yeah.
Think about it.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting. I don't know how many of you are out there who are Frontier customers. And I don't know how you feel about a 5 gig. If truly all you use it for, and everybody says this, all I do is email and browse the web, you'll be fine. Right.
But in your email, you get hundreds of megs of pictures a day. You get hundreds of megs of video a second.
Right. Right. If all you use it for is email, but every email is a picture of your grandkids in it, you're going to run out of 5 gigabytes along about the 15th. It's that simple.
Back in the early days of these metered ISDN rates, a friend of mine thought he was calculating the bandwidth properly, but he was going on a calendar month, and it turned out his billing cycle was 15th to 15th.
Yeah.
So when he got near the end of the calendar month, he stopped using his internet so he wouldn't go over.
Right.
Then the first of the month, he really, you know, killed it.
Right.
And then he got his bill, which ended on the 15th, and, you know, he was over anyway and had a huge bill. Remember, ISDN was, you know, $100, $200 a month for this.
Talk to this
for
guy about
one.
A big online bill.
Yep. Bigger than the mortgage.
More importantly, talk to his wife about a big online bill.
That back in the old days when we used to do the old dial-up.
Yeah.
To this day, I still tell the story how she came into the den at one time and said, "We have to have a talk." And she had the phone bill in her hand.
Yep.
And she goes,
"If anybody out there from Verizon is listening, I want Fios. I want Fios now. I want Fios in my home."
The problem is that most of the ISPs are talking about some sort of cap.
Right.
Because it's the old 80-20 rule. 80% of the people are just doing it for email and casual web surfing. And the 20% who are downloading movies are using all the bandwidth. So the 80% of the people are slow.
At some point, I mean, one of the things they both Time Warner and Frontier, I'm not singling out either one. The thing they both tout is how you can watch movies online because we're so fast, and listen to your favorite radio stations because we're so fast, and get all
blazing
your pictures
speed.
And stuff.
Right.
Well, excuse me, but if I can do that so fast only on the first day of the month, what the hell is the point of your service?
And some of the bandwidth, it's interesting because Time Warner's in the situation on both sides of the fence. Some of the bandwidth cap are being pressured by the cable companies because people aren't buying pay-per-view movies anymore.
Right.
And so they're getting it free on the internet. But then on the other side, Time Warner sells you pay-per-view and they sell you internet. So they're getting paid on both halves of the fence.
Yeah, but they're not losing money. But the big thing is this is going to kill things like Netflix.
Yeah.
You know, the on-demand stuff.
And the average...
Hulu's moving to work. I'm telling you that right now. That's
right.
The average internet movie, two-hour rental movie you get on Netflix or Apple TV or something like that, you're pushing 2 gigs for one movie.
Right. So you watch 2 of those a month, you're mostly done.
Right. And not get any other email or anything else.
You're right. Yeah. Right. At any rate, that's our poll of the week. The question is, do you think Frontier's 5 gigabyte bandwidth limit is reasonable? And the choices are, of course, are you nuts? And what's Time Warner's number again? So when you call in, please feel free to comment on bandwidth caps in general. We will cut you off if you start yelling about the service from one or the other. We're not interested in who's doing it because they're all doing it. Okay. But if you want to talk about bandwidth caps themselves, then we will be happy to talk about that. Clear? Good. Have I got time to take a call? Are you talking to me this week?
Listen, here's the thing. You can go ahead and take a call now, and I'm always talking to you.
That's what I love to hear, my friend.
Yeah, but this time, actually watch for me to give you the countdown on the music, okay?
Unlike last week when there was no countdown on the music?
Yeah, go ahead and take a call. Why not?
Thank you very much. Our first caller is Phyllis from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Phyllis. What's your question?
My question is, what is a runtime error, and how can it be fixed?
Switch to Linux.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, a runtime error means that something went wrong during the running of a specific program.
Rather than when the program was not running.
Right. Well, yes. But yes. Duh. It means a program, not the operating system. Yeah. It means there is a problem with a program. Okay. That is caused by usually one of two things. Really bad programming or some sort of hardware error on either RAM or a disk.
Or not uninstalling a program correctly.
Right, or not uninstalling another program correctly, like an old version of that program.
Or
what
a
program
corrupt
are you
library.
Getting the runtime error mm-hmm. with?
Excuse me?
What program are you having the runtime error in?
Microsoft Word.
And what's the...
The full
Yeah, what's the full
message?
Error?
What it says is Microsoft Visual C... +++ runtime error, program C, program files, Microsoft Office 1.1, I think this is, WinWord, EXE, abnormal program termination.
Are you intentionally running a Word macro or Word Visual Basic script?
I'm going to tell you something. I'm a senior citizen with very limited computer skills, so I'm not doing anything.
You probably got hit by a Word macro virus, and it was right. poorly written, so it crashed.
What Which is actually good.
What yeah. you can do, Phyllis,
yes.
is if you go in, go to Start, and you go to the Search.
Start, Search.
Search, and you look for a file called Normal. N-O-R-M-A-L, Normal.
Okay.
And it's you'll see the Word document next to it. Okay. With the normal document, what you do is delete that. It's a template for Word. Now, this might fix it.
Okay.
Won't promise anything.
Okay.
But delete that normal DOT, well, it's a DOT file. And you delete that. When you restart Word, it recreates it. And that's quite often where these macros in that hide. It got corrupted.
Okay.
Otherwise, the other thing you might have to do if that doesn't fix it is uninstall Word and reinstall it.
Yeah.
Those are my two suggestions.
All right, we are going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Wright, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you. It is 22 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 26 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Chris was just mentioning YouTube. You won't be able to watch a lot of YouTube videos anymore either. All right. One quick other cautionary tale before we get to the, back to the phones. U.S. federal agents have been given new powers to seize travelers' laptops and other electronic devices at the border and hold them for unspecified periods. Under recently disclosed Department of Homeland Security policy, such seizures may be carried out without suspicion of wrongdoing. Agents are empowered to share the contents of seized computers with other agencies and private entities. For data decryption and other reasons, DHS officials, that's Department of Homeland Security, said the policies applied to anyone entering the country, including U.S. citizens, and were needed to prevent terrorism. The measures have long been in place, but were only disclosed in July under pressure from civil liberties and business travel groups acting on reports that increasing numbers of international travelers had had their laptops, cell phones, and other digital devices removed and examined. The policies cover hard drives, flash drives, cell phones, iPods, pagers, beepers, and video and audio tapes, as well as books, pamphlets, and other written materials. Because we are afraid of ideas. The policies require federal agents to take measures to protect business information and attorney-client privileged material. They stipulate that any copies of the data must be destroyed when a review is completed, and no probable cause exists to keep the information. So they can seize your laptop without probable cause, and when they're done looking at it, they can destroy it.
I saw that article too, Nick, and it occurred to me that if I were a traveling man again, I would have my laptop splash screen be a copy of the Fourth Amendment.
They don't care. Fourth Amendment doesn't count anymore.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Well,
it doesn't matter.
That counts when you get to court.
It wouldn't matter, but I'd make the point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'd make the point. So my thought is, if you're going to be traveling out of the country, buy an EEPC.
Overseas.
Out of the country. If you go to Canada, that's out of the country. Mexico's out of the country.
But buy it overseas.
Well, or buy it overseas. And then when you come back, if they confiscate it, you're done.
No, just leave it there. Charge it to the job.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
And now, as I mentioned a week or so ago, when I was in Canada, when I came back from Canada, I hid my iPod because, you know, this has been going around a while.
Yeah.
I just put it on the floor, but you couldn't see it. Right. But even if every song I have on my iPod is legitimately purchased,
how do you prove
that? How do I prove that?
Right.
Unless I carry every single CD in the car with me.
Right.
And how do I prove I bought that CD? I could have stolen it from the store.
Right. Right.
I know, Nick, that you don't like this to be a political show, but I've got to say policy, and that's what they describe this as, is not law unless it's a police state. That's all I'll say about it.
Right.
So then you can take the Customs Department to court and you'll win your court case.
Maybe.
Depending on the judge.
Right, on the Fourth Amendment. But your computer, your data, your media is already gone.
Right. Right. All right. Our next caller is Jackie from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Jackie. What's your question?
Well, talking about the limitations on usage through Frontier, some people are using services such as Vonage, which is voice over IP on the Internet.
Didn't even think of that. Yeah.
Yep.
And how do you
Skype on the Internet? Yep.
Yep. So, I mean, there's another big thing.
And video instant messaging and all of those things.
iChat, mm-hmm. AIM, MSN, all of the chatting programs.
Especially the video ones.
My daughter does MySpace. You can't visit a page that isn't downloading music and that isn't playing,
rather. And Flash.
Exactly. Music and Flash and videos and things. You're absolutely right, Jackie.
It seems like they're just trying to find more things to really tick us off and be more angry with them about the way they conduct business.
Well, I believe they've managed that in this particular case.
Without even trying too hard.
You would think that they would maybe get the message when their customers are leaving in droves and everything else, but I guess it's going to be time for me to pay the $200 cancellation fee and part ways with Frontier and say, you know, enough is enough. I think
we hope they're listening to you, Jackie.
We hope they are.
Yeah,
and again, the question is, where do you go? Because pretty soon we're going to have the same, I don't know what the cap will be, but there will be a cap on Time Warner as well.
Yeah, they're going to go there too. I mean,
we should all go back to download, because you couldn't possibly download 5 gigs in a month on dial-up.
Oh, on dial-up, yeah.
That's what I meant to say. Yeah, we all go back to dial-up, yeah.
I don't know exactly what the lawsuit was or what the judgment was, but I do know there was a judgment made recently against Comcast. And something tells me, and it was just in the paper too, and I didn't read the article, unfortunately.
Right.
But that they were, it was decided against them because they had done, I believe something.
They were actively denying a BitTorrent client. So if you're downloading something, Comcast got in the middle of your download and told the other end that you don't want that anymore, so it stopped downloading.
Okay.
So that was a little more onerous, but they're doing that because of people they claimed, because they were downloading too much and eating up all the bandwidth.
Now, the way I heard that was they were throttling it back. You're saying that they were cutting it off? That's interference with communication.
And was a journalist from the AP downloading the Bible, which is public open source. Mm-hmm. His connection got terminated by Comcast telling the other end, I don't want that anymore.
That's more serious.
Yeah.
And through the Monroe County Public Library, I download audiobooks.
Yeah.
Right.
To my MP3 player. So now I can't take my MP3 player to Canada because they might confiscate it. And
you can't download your books anymore because the bandwidth cap. Yeah.
And I won't be able to download my books anymore because of the bandwidth. I mean,
so you don't need to take them to Canada with you. So you win.
So we should all go back to reading paper books in the car.
You know, the thing is,
while we're driving, that's the way we used to.
They can confiscate books.
Even though I see some people doing it, it's hard for me to drive and read a book at the same time. I mean, you know, it's. I guess I just can't multitask well enough. But
well, that's a problem you have, Jackie.
Please don't try.
You can do it well.
Yeah.
Or who can do it.
You know, what do you want me to tell you? But I have to tell you guys, too, my daughter works for one of the very large chip makers in the world. And she was, when I went out to visit her in Phoenix a couple of weeks ago, she was complaining that she couldn't get her home computer on the internet anymore. So, and she had no idea what was wrong with it. So I sat down, her wireless adapter had disappeared somehow. I went on the internet on my computer, downloaded the software because I couldn't find hers, got her up and running and sent her an email, and she wrote back to me. She goes, "How did you know how to do that?" I said, "Because I listened to Soundbite."
Cool. Thank you.
She said, "Well, shows are boring." I said, "But I listen and I learn things." And, you know, it's just funny to me. Here, this person is an engineer for this company.
Right.
And really knows nothing about computers.
Right.
It's kind of amusing. She just,
well, and you tell her to start listening to our show, I'll guarantee she's not going to find it boring.
Right. I know. Well, see, the time difference now, this would be the thing. On a Sunday morning, when you're in Arizona, it's 3 hours difference. And when you're 28 years old, 8 o'clock in the morning is early.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, when you're 57 years old, 8 o'clock in the morning is early. I don't care what anybody tells you. All right. Thank you so much,
okay,
Jackie.
Great. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. And what about those of us who download Linux distributions?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
There's most of a gig every single time I download one.
And those of us who not only download them, but redistribute them with BitTorrent.
Exactly.
Which is perfectly legal.
Yep. Which is because they're all open source.
Yeah.
All right. Our next caller is Kirk from Spencerport, New York. Welcome, Kirk. What's your question?
Hey, guys. Yeah, I'm looking to find a cheap way to transfer movies from my camcorder to my computer. And I've come across a USB video capture cable from StarTech, and I wonder if you guys had any experience with these cables and how reliable are they?
So you have an analog camera?
Yes.
Yeah, the digital cameras, that's all built in.
That's yep. That's with a 8mm tape?
Yeah, it's a high 8.
Yeah.
And my camcorder has an S-video output.
The USB capture cards are okay, you know, for home movies. You wouldn't want to do anything professional with it.
Would the Miglia products be...
Yeah, the Miglia DV bridge or the, it's the Plextor DV bridge or the Miglia, their TV box or even the Elgato iTV, which also lets you watch TV on your computer, but it will capture from an analog video source.
Now, this is a cable. It's not a card. It's a cable.
Right. Your cable is coming out with an analog.
Yeah, it's got a little circuit board in the cable somewhere.
And
yeah.
Those products that Steve is mentioning will convert to digital and then put into your computer.
Right.
As this cable theoretically would.
Right. Yeah, XLR8 used to have one, Belkin used to have one. There's a lot of the USB video. They're okay.
And they're real time.
Right, so you have an hour video, it's going to take an hour to bring it in.
Right.
We usually say it's home movie quality, it's not professional quality.
Okay.
A professional box like the Plextor DV Bridge is, Plextor has one, Pyro makes one. They're like $200 for a professional analog-to-digital bridge.
What's your operating system, Kirk?
I got Windows XP Home.
So he could use a card as well.
He could use a card at home. The other thing that, because this is a very common question for people with older cameras, are you thinking of buying a new digital camera anytime soon? Because most digital cameras have this bridge built into them, so you can plug your analog camera into the digital, into the computer.
Oh, so you could go from camera to camera.
Right, or VCR to camera to get your old VHS tapes into the computer as well.
Oh, I haven't thought of that, but that might be another way to go.
A lot of people are doing it exactly that way.
All right, well, I appreciate the info.
Right, but for now, if you're going to be keeping this camcorder for a while, Newegg has the StarTech for about $55, and it certainly, you know, it will go from composite video into the USB port, so it would certainly work. It would certainly do the job. All right, our next caller, Paul from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Paul. What's your question?
Well, I have kind of been idiosyncratic. Question. I've had a stalker. I'm a writer. I have a website. And this guy has been with me for going on 3 years now with little boy potty mouth stuff. He's written to the my publishers, and I publish with real publishing houses, not vanity press junk.
Right.
There were death threats. The deal that Rochester Telephone does, that if you dial their number immediately after you get a call like that, they need three, and then they contact the Rochester police.
Right.
Well, they might as well have contacted the Three Stooges.
Well, it's the catch-22 that no crime has been committed until he kills you.
No, that's not true. If there's been a death threat, that's a crime.
Is it now?
Yes, it is.
Well, then there's pending legislation on the U.S. federal anti-cyber stalking laws. So there are stronger laws coming into effect.
I would definitely forward all of those. I don't know the exact
I'm
address,
looking for it.
But well, you should be forward
RPD
those to the police.
They called the number, you know. They had to get a subpoena to get the number because it was a Motorola mobile or something.
Well, right, right. Phone, and that's fine. But even so, you can forward the emails that are from this guy. You can also, if you want to, block email from this guy. That won't stop him from writing you, and it doesn't lessen the threat if he's serious. But if you think he's not serious and it's just an annoyance, you can certainly block the email address.
Well, yeah, I suppose that's a remedy, but...
Did it turn out...
All you gotta do is change whatever carrier he's with that piece.
Right, 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 I understand
that. Do you know if he was in another state? Because then you can get the FBI involved for crossing state boundaries.
No, he's in Long Island.
Mm. Well, the FCC
really,
may.
Paul, the problem is this is really a legal issue. And you need to get hold of the police and get them involved in this. If you honestly believe this guy is serious.
A threat to your life.
Right. If he's a threat to your life, you deserve police protection and you should get hold of them and get it. That's unfortunately not really a technical issue. Talk to your lawyer and start sending this stuff to the police and make sure they get involved.
Yeah,
we'll try to post some links on reporting cybercrime and things you can do about it.
We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Wright, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Hey, those of you who are on Facebook or MySpace, just because a friend sends you something doesn't mean you should trust it. A new worm is spreading via Facebook and MySpace, turning victims' computers into zombies on a botnet. Basically, infected machines are propagating the worm by sending messages via the social networks to friends in that network. The messages look like they contain links to video clips. Of course, now you're going to have to stop downloading anyway. When clicked on, they prompt the recipient to download an executable file that purports to be the latest version of Flash Player. Instead, it is the worm itself infecting yet another victim. When infected machines log onto the social network next time, their computers automatically send the malicious messages out to new victims grabbed from their friends list. Those sorts of worms have been around MySpace before. This is really the first time they've seen them on Facebook. And of course, since the Flash Player updates so regularly and does so many whack things to begin with, a lot of people will just automatically click on yes for a new version of Flash. Oh, yeah, okay. So, you know, be very careful about downloading anything your computer, even perhaps especially if it seems to come from a friend. And for heaven's sake, apply security patches as soon as they come out. That's all I have to say about that. Our next caller is Stan from Greece, New York. Welcome, Stan. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I'm looking into identity theft is scaring us. Upstate, I guess, New York has the lowest rate of identity theft. That's because for the last 5 years we've been broke.
But that's still, right. What's our identities?
But still, you know, I'm concerned because my wife is on a darn thing, QVC and everything else, giving out all this information and stuff. Isn't there any software or something that to protect a customer or to do something where if somebody's stealing, the terminal blows up in her face or something?
Well, wouldn't that be nice? Here's the thing. You want, there's got to be a balance between the convenience of all this online shopping stuff and your personal information. One thing you can do is to have a separate credit card for online use and only move in enough money to pay for what you just bought.
Good idea.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Also, there are a number of credit cards that have one-time use numbers. You can call up, for example, you can go to their website and sign into them. Now, there again, you got to make sure you're on a secure connection. You sign into them, and once they prove they're you, they give you what looks like a credit card number.
Mm.
But it's a one-use thing.
Gotcha.
So if I use it to buy something, and they steal it and try to do something else with it, it doesn't work anymore.
Right.
There's a problem with some of those one-use. Steve Gibson from GRC did a big story about it. PayPal was offering one-use credit cards. Turns out that it's 1 month of use.
Mm. You got to be careful as to which
use.
That is. Right.
You have to
care.
Know what you're buying.
You know, right. This theft identity, you say, well, we can't exactly guarantee you. Well, that's heartwarming, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you're getting into an. I read an article a couple months ago. Some hackers parked outside a huge department store, were able to tap into their point of sales,
yep.
came up with it's like 400,000.
Yep.
People.
See, and
that's just the lazy way of doing
and
it.
Well, and that's what it used to be. This has been a problem for hundreds of years.
Right.
They used to go through your garbage and find your old bills and then apply for a credit card in your name, or the waiter who disappears with your credit card for half an hour.
Every single day, we hand our credit cards to the lowest paid employees in America and think nothing of it.
Yep.
We do it every day, all day, a dozen times a day.
Now we're a little more.
Now we're worried whether we're doing it online. Well, it's no different. It really is no different.
And there's a couple of issues now with the prevalence of ATM and debit cards. Most credit card companies have a $50 maximum liability for fraud, and most credit card companies will waive that anyway after you report it and take it off your bill. However, if you use a debit card, the money's already gone out of your account, and you're less likely to get it back.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So don't use debit cards, use credit cards.
Stan, there's another tactic to play is that you can go and buy their gift cards, racks and racks of gift cards. And one of them is, it's either MasterCard or Visa. I can't remember which one, but it's sold at, I think, $100 and maybe $250 increments. Buy one of those. You use up your $100. It costs you a few bucks to use this card, but that's the price you're going to pay
for
the security.
But you can use it anywhere. And you can always
use it anywhere.
Recharge it or you get a new one or whatever.
No, that one you don't recharge. You draw it down to as close to zero as you can. They get the rest, and you call that the price you pay for the security.
Yep.
There's no name on it or anything. It just gives you numbers.
Nice. All right. Going to take another break. Back in just a couple minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Reich, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you at 49 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 53 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. All right, boys and girls, strap yourselves in. Get your footy jammies on. Grab a mug of hot cocoa, sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair, because if we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Oh, yeah. Yep. What part of it ain't gonna work don't you understand? I don't care if you just went out and bought the latest, greatest quad-core machine. It's got 512K graphics. It's got 4 mega memory, or 4 gig of memory. Pardon me, 500 gigabyte hard drive. And it's running, yes, that lovely system, Vista. You still have to read the side of the box when you get games.
Or any
and I
program.
Don't care if they're even old games. The side of the box says what operating system it will work with. And no way, snowballs, chance, and HE double hockey sticks, is it going to work otherwise, especially on some of the older ones. And yes, I know it worked fine on Windows XP, but it just ain't going to work on Vista.
Requires Windows 98 or later.
Yes.
Vista's later, right?
Yep.
I like the ones that require Windows 98 or better. I have a Mac. That's better, right?
and you got all this power and everything else, but it's just not going to work. And I'm sorry if I disappoint you in that. And yes, I can do some phenomenal things.
And they always think it's your fault.
Yes,
I get that too. It's my fault that the computer doesn't work.
Well, what kind of computer shop is this if you can't get it working? It's not the computer shop. It's the manufacturer. They don't support it. And this is what I've been trying to tell folks, that even new stuff. I had one client get Vista, and this printer, which is only 4 months old, won't work on this new Vista machine. And the manufacturer says, yeah, we're not going to support it. We don't bother worrying about doing that. If you can get it to work with the old XP drivers, fine. Otherwise, oh, too bad. And it's only a few months old.
You put diesel in your gasoline car. Is that the car's fault? It doesn't run on diesel?
Exactly. Right. So, you know, take the time, read the side of the box when you purchase something, whether it's going to, one, run on that machine because of system requirements, and pay attention to what operating system.
All right. Hold him down. Grab him. I got the syringe. Hold on. All right. That's it. We put Uncle Dave away for another week. Take off your footy jammies. Put your empty mugs in the dishwasher, and we put Uncle Dave away for another week. Calm and quiet descends upon us all. All right. Now, do I have time for a call? No time for a call? All right, that's all right.
That means I can come back?
No.
Hey, no. Yeah, 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 yeah.
All right, for those of you who are on the line, please stay on the line. We had an interesting, we'll get to you after the break. We'll talk again about the poll. We've got some people who are interested in talking about that. We had an interesting suggestion, of course, which was letting Verizon know you want Fios, so and let them know we want it here. Tell them you're waiting for it. That's one way to handle this. I so want Fios. You can't begin to imagine it. I lust after it.
Until Verizon puts their cap. 45 megabit is great, but if it's only 5 gigs a month.
Well, right. Well, if they've got that kind of bandwidth, they don't need that kind of cap. The cap could be 200 gig a month. That would be all right. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you. If you're on the line, please stay on the line. If you're not on the line, for heaven's sake, get on the line, because we want to talk to you. We'll be talking about bandwidth caps and all of your questions. And back on the other side of the news, the weather, the sports, and all the stuff you really listen to Wham for, I'm Nick Francesco. At 57 minutes after the hour, we're Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Now, as you know, every week we do a poll on our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Last week's poll was about Google. Is it a monopoly? 291 of you voted, making it number 201 on the all-time hit list. Thank you very much. 44% of you said, who cares? 37% of you said no, and only 19% of you said yes. This week's poll comes from the same news item I read at the top of the hour. Frontier has decided to implement a 5 gigabit monthly bandwidth cap for all their residential DSL users. That means if you are running Frontier DSL, you can only upload and download a total together, the two of them, of 5 gigabytes a month. According to an updated acceptable use policy, Frontier now declares that any monthly usage above 5 gigabytes bidirectional is an unreasonable amount of usage. That's certainly going to be good news for regional competitor Time Warner Cable, at least temporarily, since they're apparently cooking up some low bandwidth caps of their own. I quote from the Frontier website, quote, customers must comply with all Frontier network bandwidth, data storage, and usage limitations. Frontier may suspend, terminate, or apply additional charges to the service if such usage exceeds a reasonable amount of usage. A reasonable amount of usage is defined as 5 gigabytes combined upload and download consumption during the course of a 30-day billing period. As with most companies who try to justify low caps, the carrier's marketing department attempts to make the absurdly low cap sound reasonable by measuring the cap in terms of the amount of emails users can send, or the number of web pages you can view, or the hours you can spend playing online games. Here's a tip to all those marketing departments. This tactic only makes us think that you think we're incredibly stupid. Those of us who run sites with pictures, or who like to look at pictures on the internet, or like to stream music or video, will find ourselves running out of 5 gigabytes pretty danged fast, and then being really, really porky for the rest of the month.
So, in just a couple of hours, too, as I was mentioning during the break, I found a program that monitors my network traffic, started it running just after we got on air at 11. So far, I've got 600 megs in an hour.
Yep.
So I'll hit 5 gigs in 6-7 hours.
Yep.
And I'm doing nothing. I'm surfing the web.
Right, exactly. So I don't quite know how this is supposed to work. But here's the poll. Do you think Frontier's 5 gigabit bandwidth limit is reasonable? And the choices are, of course, are you nuts? And what's Time Warner's number again? So far, we've got 100 even at this moment. 52% of you say, are you nuts? 43% of you say, what's Time Warner's number again? And only 5 of you have said, of course, it's reasonable. When you're done with that poll, and I guarantee you, you're going to have more to say than just click a button on this one. If you look in the little yellow box underneath the poll and click on give us your opinion, it will take you to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
And you will be... That's it? Nothing from you? You got nothing? He gave me this look every week.
Yeah, he looked like a deer in the, caught in the headlights.
Asknick.com.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Didn't mean to spring that one on you.
I mean, something new here.
Boy, if I was allowed to say what I'm thinking, you know what I mean?
You were looking up at me like, I'm ready.
I'm taking, transmitter readings for 18,000 radio stations in here. I'm doing other things, and you want a sound effect.
On the one hand, you have to stop and think about what's important.
Do that on your own time.
My sound effect. On the other hand, the fact that you screwed it up meant I get to say,
AskNick.com.
Another time. That's not a bad thing. Thank you. Thank you very much. At any rate, at my website, you can leave an opinion. Check out what I do. I do a newsletter. I have a set of forums that I do where you can leave information and stuff like that. If you're a member, you can search through all my old newsletters and find answers to questions without even having to ask them. That's that's worth way more than $15 a year, and that's all I charge for this thing, so I don't know why you're not all doing it. And then join us back on our own website here at Soundbites. If you go into forums, you'll notice that last night I bowed to pressure.
Yes, I noticed that. Very good.
Thank you. I bowed to all the pressure you people have been putting on me. It's been horrible. I can't take it anymore. I finally cracked. I thought I was stronger than that, but I'm not. I've added a forum for Second Life.
Well,
it wasn't that big a deal.
But the thing of it is, though, is it's, you know, a lot of folks say, oh, just what we need another one. You know, I mean, there's both sides of the fence and folks can go either way.
You don't have to read every post in every forum every day.
Yeah, exactly.
If you don't like Second Life, don't go into the forum. See how easy that was?
But some folks make a big issue out of it and they say, well, they're giving up on the IRC and all this other stuff. No, it's just another media that we can talk live.
Right.
And that's the whole thing, you know.
Well, I haven't logged into the IRC for the last couple of weeks, mainly because while those guys are having fascinating discussions, they have nothing to do with what we're talking about on the air.
Exactly.
And I'm really, if I'm going to concentrate on what's being said on the air, I can't follow two separate conversations.
And it's too hard toggling between the screens. It just gets confusing.
Well, that I can do, but that's it. But it's just a pain.
Yeah. It's just, like you said, especially when it's not on topic.
And the stuff that they're talking about in there is great. It's very fascinating. I just can't really concentrate. I can't do justice to the people calling in and follow those conversations.
Well, the other thing that we should mention,
why don't get into Second Life while we're on the air?
Well, the other thing that we should mention, though, is we've made an executive decision as far as once we go to the webcasting starting in September, and we will be posting the schedule there because I did figure out the dates that we won't be on here on WAMP. Well, we will, but we'll be on the webcast.
Web only. Yeah.
On the web. So what that means, folks, is during those 11 weeks, what I think we're going to have folks do is email us the questions that they want. I'll print those off. I'll be responsible for that. Bring those into the studio for that particular Sunday when we're doing the webcast, and we will read them and answer them there on the air. We can also check the mail program.
Well, we may be able to take calls. We'll be here in the studio. The numbers will still work.
Will they with the sports? I'm not sure with that. Because if they're doing the
phones
sport,
and phones. But yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, they're doing a talk show.
Right.
But anyways, while we do the webcast, we can certainly take questions there. And then once we go into Second Life, we're going to do that right here, right after the webcast.
Right. So from 11 to 12, we'll be webcasting. And then from 12 to 1, we'll be in Second Life to answer more of your questions. And unlike Friday night, we're actually going to stop at 1.
Yeah. Friday nights are still
a.m.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. We're going to stop at 1 Tuesday. P.m. Friday night, we were in and we were sitting around and doing all this stuff. And suddenly I looked at the clock and it was 10 minutes to 1. We're supposed to end at 11.
But that's still going to go on, too, because we're getting a lot of folks literally from other countries.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really growing.
Yeah, it's really
the number
nice.
Of folks that are showing up from all over the U.S. And I think there was one lady there from England.
Yep.
That was in on the show Friday night. Again, just answering computer questions and having a good time.
Just chatting about various things. It was actually a lot of fun. So join us in the forums. Join us at Soundbites. In the forums, join us on IRC during the show. Join us in Second Life Friday nights at 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
Can we make that 11 at least until Stargate is over?
Steve, use the VCR.
That's what God made.
You know what it was? Well, it was the Doctor Who series finale.
That ended at 10, so it was fine for me. It was phenomenal.
And lovely. And then Stargate was on, and I went in the other room to do the Second Life, and my wife wouldn't watch it either.
Because you wanted to watch it with you.
Right. So now when I go to watch it, she's going to yell at me that she's not ready to watch it yet.
We don't do family disputes.
We don't do family disputes.
My DVR is full of stuff I can't watch yet.
Yeah, well, get over it.
Burn
That's
it
all
DVD.
I have to say to you. My DVR is full of my daughter's stuff that she never watches.
Yeah.
Dad, are you going to be on the computer? Yes, honey. It's my job. Well, I can't watch my show. Well, sit next to me. Okay, fine. Yeah, all right, get over it.
And she's getting older.
She is getting older. She's a good kid, too.
When did she start driving?
She's shut up. She's a good kid. So we're going to go back to the phones
now. Do we have
now.
The permit?
We're going to go back to the phones
Wait,
now.
Do we have the permit?
No, she's waiting until... She's in Geneva this summer.
Okay.
She's doing the Geneva Summer Program, which, by the way, is a phenomenal thing. And it's when that's over. She's concentrating... God love her. She's concentrating specifically on that. And when that's over, we'll go get the... let's take the next call.
There's your new car.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I'm going to enjoy this.
Our next caller is Jim from Irondequoit. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Good morning, gentlemen. Last night...
Who walked in?
Yeah.
Last night, I tried unsuccessfully to block two pages, MySpace and Facebook, and I'm running two browsers, Internet Explorer and Firefox. Firefox, for both web pages, very unsuccessful. I didn't know. It just didn't take. And Internet Explorer, Facebook took okay, but MySpace only blocked the home page, and anything after the slash, you can still access those pages. Is there a way to block them?
Yes, there is.
With both.
Now, what is it, for one of your kids?
Yes.
And they have limited access?
Well, I'm going to try to have it so they will not be able to access those pages at all.
Right, but when you created their username, are they a standard user or a limited user?
Are you all under one username?
A username for the computer?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, you need to stop that immediately.
Okay.
Because that user is the administrator and can do anything they want.
Right. You need to set it so that you have to log into that machine.
Okay.
And then you want to create usernames for each of your children that are only users, not administrators.
Okay.
And you put a password on yours, so, and you don't give that to them.
Ever.
Now, there is a way.
Ever.
Now, will that block them from the entire internet or just...
No. What you can do...
Well, that blocks them from getting into your administrator account, so they cannot install programs without your permission.
Including, by the way, viruses.
Right, so that's that first level of security you want on your computer. Then getting onto the internet is the next step.
Okay.
And there is a way...
I'm trying to find it in the Firefox preferences on how to block websites.
Well, there's a WIN file that you can edit and put in there to block it. Because one of my customers wants to block, like YouTube and all that. Mm-hmm. And we've got my partner Dan and I were looking at it, and he came up with a way that you can edit this one file and put the website in there.
Oh, it's your host file. Edit your host file and point myspace.com to 127.001.
Right.
And you just, you can
kind of a geeky way to do it.
Yeah, and you can just block it. You can put the whole list of sites in there that you want to block.
There's also parental control programs, CyberSitter, NetNanny,
and all those
that you can install on your computer as well to put in whitelists and blacklists of websites. Some routers, you can put it into the router itself, but then that would block everyone on your network, not just that one user.
Okay.
So it's... You said you were able to block one page in Firefox. Where did you find that?
Not Firefox. In Internet Explorer, it was very successful in doing Facebook. But for MySpace, it blocks just the home page, and then everything after the slash, it doesn't block.
Right. But try some of those other opportunities. The host file is certainly a viable thing. NetNanny or one of those is good as well. Got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 19, now 20 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we're having fun here.
I tried closing the window, and I get another message that says, don't close this window if you want your computer to be clean.
Right. But Steve went to this website and got a pop-up that said, your machine is infected.
My C drive is infected.
His C drive. Now, he's on a Macintosh. He doesn't have a C drive. It's infected. He should click here. So he clicked here. And this window comes up that looks like Microsoft Windows Defender, which cannot possibly be running on his Macintosh.
To make this clear, this all happened during break.
Happened during the break. And now it's going through his hard drive, and it shows the...
I have 46 errors, including the Trojan Zlob, which is a critical threat to Windows.
Right. And it's just... it clearly is just so much bourgeois because He's on a Mac. None of this could possibly be happening.
But it's very well written. I tried to click cancel because it wants me to buy this fake program.
Yep.
And a little message came up and says, don't close this window if you want your PC to be clean.
Wow.
So it's very well written.
PC that you want to be clean?
Yeah. Harmful and malicious software is detective. These programs are going to damage your computer. Click OK to install this component. And the only thing I can do is click OK.
No, I've been seeing a lot of that. The antivirus 2008 and the antivirus 2009. And that's what it is.
And it's a
scam to get $29.95 out of you.
If you're lucky, they just steal that $30.
Right.
But it's a fake program, but it's written so well and looks so good, the average person isn't going to know.
It is very professional looking. Right. Now, how do we stop that from happening, guys?
You don't.
No.
You have to recognize that it's a fake program.
Yep. Yeah.
It came from
a legitimate site that probably doesn't know this is happening. It's coming from an advertising agent that's buying ad blocks that's going to a server, so it's 15 people removed, pops up on a legitimate site.
Is this being redirected from the original site? In other words, are we clicking on something that's redirected to this spyware thing?
It's the same thing we find so often is it's embedded in HTML code in an ad that runs on the site.
Okay.
So normally you go to a site and they run some little banner across the top.
Yep.
That's, of course, HTML code. It's standard web code.
Okay.
And in web code, you can run windows. You can open another window.
Sure.
That window opens up to this site, which looks like Windows Defender. And actually looks like it's running a thing. It's looking through the C drive.
There's a progress bar scanning, counting up all the viruses it was finding on my
Allegedly.
Mac.
Probably a random number generator.
Yeah.
Yep. So, yeah, it really is. It looks great.
Well, that's
just a web page. It's all it is.
Yeah.
The question is,
there's a couple of ways to do it, and it sort of links into what the last caller was. There's a plugin for Firefox called AdBlock and another one called NoScript.
AdBlock Plus.
Another one called NoScript that won't run any JavaScripts, but then there are good JavaScripts you want to run, which is tough. Yeah. And that will prevent try to prevent these types of ads, because some ads are going to get through anyway. It's like the pop-up blockers we've been using for years that now don't work anymore because they're not pop-ups, they're pop-unders.
Right.
So until the bad guys figure a way around it. So AdBlock Plus or a NoScript.
And the
Firefox.
Way you get to that is you go to your tools menu.
Well, In Firefox.
Yeah, tools, add-ons.
Click on add-ons. And if you have the old version, you'll get a little link at the bottom of that window that says get more extensions. If you have 3.0, it's actually a button that says get add-ons. And then that takes you to a Firefox page where you can download AdBlock Plus and install it.
The other thing that we'd mentioned, and we're going to put instructions up on our link list. It's a little tricky. If you edit your host file, which is a mechanism that your computer uses to find websites.
Where's that host file?
It's in the Etsy directory.
In Windows, hold on.
Windows System 32 Etsy?
It's in System 32 under Windows or WinNT. System 32 drivers, etc, hosts.
And on the
hosts,
Mac,
plural.
Hosts, the file is called hosts.
Okay.
And it's in the etc directory, in the drivers directory, in the System 32 directory, in the Windows directory. No, it's just hosts. It's called hosts.
On the Mac, make sure it's probably a hard drive system, Etsy.
Yeah, and
but under Etsy,
under
in
Linux
case.
Is /etc/hosts, and you can put things in there. I have for work. I have a half a dozen machines I log into every day, and they're all in there with their legitimate addresses. That makes it faster for me to connect to them because it doesn't have to look them up anywhere. And in fact, the other day when DNS was down for Frontier, I was still able to get to all those systems because I had them set in my host file.
You're in effect doing your own DNSing for those sites.
For those sites only. Right.
And so what you can do is for known advertising companies like DoubleClick is one of the big ones. You put DoubleClick in your host file and point it to an invalid address, 0000 even. So when your computer, when your browser opens a web page and on that web page is a link to DoubleClick, your computer looks in the host file to see if it knows where DoubleClick is. And it's, here's an address for DoubleClick. I'll go there. And there is nowhere, so it can't load a DoubleClick ad.
And it's the full name, DoubleClick.net, as opposed to just DoubleClick.
Yeah, I'm finding that, what is the other one you mentioned? The NoScript, that blocks.
Yep. Yeah.
That blocks this site, DoubleClick.
Yep.
For me.
Yep. That works fine.
So there are a few of those. Okay, on the Mac, it's under hard drive private Etsy hosts.
Got it.
That file. So that's one way to block. The trick is, for this specific one, we have to know what ad agency is serving that page up. And it's most likely the website owner doesn't know what's happening. The ad agency they contracted with doesn't know what's happening. The ad distributor they contracted with doesn't know what's happening. Someone bought an ad and it's filtering up the way.
Right.
So is it possible to track back to find out what their IP address is? Or
sometimes, sometimes you can, there are programs you can run that spy on what's going on in your machine, and they'll bring up who is in your machine at the moment.
You can load your own spyware.
Where you went.
Yeah, who
yeah,
is,
basically.
Right?
Well, you can do who is, but I'm talking about programs that say, oh, he's just gone to site XYZ. You know, and that's in, for example, in my log files.
Ah.
So I can then go back and say, oh, XYZ, that's no place I went to. Let's see what's there. I go there, and all of a sudden this thing pops up, and now I know, ah, this is the site. I can then add it to my host file, and I'll never see it again.
So you could find this in your history file.
I'll get an error. Maybe, if they haven't removed it from your history file. Their Internet Explorer, it's very easy to remove that stuff. In Firefox, it's harder, but doable.
All right.
So that's possible. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller, Marty from Mendon, New York. Welcome, Marty. What's your question?
Hi, I have a dilemma. I'm trying to decide if I want to buy a new computer or just upgrade my iMac G5. I've had it since fall of 04. And I've had some heat issues that have been taken care of with a recall or some sort of free thing. But now I'm having some disk issues. It seems like it's kind of getting fuzzy when it's trying to move something from the clipboard to Excel and everything. So I don't know, is this a hard disk issue? Could I, you know, I'm trying to buy things to use like the iLife 08 and it's not... I don't have the right system, so I'm going to have to do a few things, like at least get Leopard and iLife 08 and a new hard drive, but I don't know if I'm spending good money after bad.
That's a very tough decision, and a lot of people run into it frequently.
The PowerPC platform, which what you have is that the G5, is starting to age, but it's still of use. My opinion is if you can get a replacement hard drive, if you're sure that's what you need to make the system operate again properly, if it's a reasonable cost, go ahead and do it, but don't put any more into it than that, because the Intel machines that are out nowadays are far superior. You're going to find a lot more satisfaction using those with your programs such as iLife.
And this machine is only, what, 2 years old?
Well, now it's
going on four.
Going on four.
Four-year-old machine, you're going to start finding other things start to fail.
Programs you want to buy now, you can't because you've already run into it. They won't work on your OS, so you have to buy a new OS.
Right.
And eventually we'll start seeing programs that require the new Intel processors.
That's true. You will have to add over $100 to put Leopard on it.
Right. So, yeah, you're looking at about $500 to upgrade the hard drive and Leopard and iLife.
And then wait for the next thing to fail.
Right. And then a new 20-inch iMac, you know, starts at $1,200, and which would be 5-10 times faster than what
you have
now.
Actually, you could even get a MacBook for less than that.
Yeah, all the new Macs come with the latest OS and the latest iLife, which is the movies and music and editing software. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And if you're living on the G5 and you buy even a low-end Mac system...
Yeah, the low-end systems Intel are really fast.
Compared to what she's got now,
the
absolutely.
PowerPC, right, yeah.
See, I have the same model computer myself, and it's pushing 4 years old, and I'm running into programs I can't run. I tried to load Guitar Hero for my son. It won't work on my PowerPC. It requires an Intel. It's mostly the games. The new Star Wars game won't run on my PowerPC.
But as time goes on, it will be more and more programs.
More and more programs.
I don't really play games, but I was going
to
try and use the iWeb, the new iWeb. I can write HTML code, but I'm trying to create something for my business where I'm going to be selling photos. And
well, I hope you're not on DSL.
Well, I know. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
I heard you saying that. So
upgrade or buy new is a huge decision. One of the big advantages of buying new is you can either sell your old computer and use that as part of the money to buy the new one, or now you have a second computer.
Right.
Pass it down to someone in your house or have two computers yourself.
Yeah.
And there's advantages to that as well.
Right. Marty, for what it's worth, I have the very first iMac Intel that came out. It has already been obsoleted by several generations. And first several times that Steve came over and saw how fast it was an eyebrow raiser for him because he grew up through the PC, the G4, the G5 family of processors. Right. So there's a lot to be said for upgrading right now. It looks like $500 to update or... say $1,200 to upgrade.
Yeah, Right. I do have the iMac, or the little one, what's it, the Mini, Mac Mini with mm-hmm. Intel at work. So I have a comparison, a basic, but I'm on a 100T line there, and so it's a little hard to tell what's because...
Well, anything you load from your own hard drive, anything you run locally is how you tell.
Okay.
Right. So that's how you tell. And before everybody starts writing in to me, I understand that this is... The 5 gigabyte bandwidth cap is only on residential. If you have business class DSL, you don't have the cap.
And there's also some question on whether the residential max service counts toward the limit or not. We should mention Phil Dampier and Jerry Seward locally. They've, especially Phil, has started a website called stopthecap.com. And they're posting a lot of information
about it. We love Phil.
Yeah. They're posting a lot of information about it. And people have been calling Frontier and asking about what this cap means and if they're on the max plan, if it counts, if they're on a business plan, does it count? And apparently it hasn't started yet, but they're weighing it to see if it's going to start, and it probably will. So it almost sounds like the people at Frontier don't know yet either.
Well, according to their usage policy.
Yeah, the usage policy, yeah. But when you call tech support and ask them if it's running yet, they don't necessarily know.
Well, they don't know. It doesn't mean it's not running.
Yeah. Right. And the biggest thing was that we mentioned earlier, there's no mechanism in place from Frontier to show you how much you've used.
Right.
So you'll hit that 5 gig limit and they'll shut you off.
And what about those of us who work from home?
Yeah.
I do a lot of work from home. It's legitimately part of my business, but to save gas, I don't have to drive into work. I can work from home. Does that mean I have to get business class internet just to do my job from home, just to save gasoline and save the environment and everything else? Now I got to buy business class.
Yep.
Internet? I'm just not a happy camper.
I have another scenario. I have a very dear friend whose husband came down with a rare and very debilitating and very serious disease. She spent a lot of time on the internet, not only researching it, but forwarding the information to us friends of hers.
Right.
So that we knew what was going on. She would have come up with a 5 gig limit long before the end of the month.
Yeah, now she's in the process of not being able to get vital medical information.
Right.
Because of an arbitrary cap on bandwidth. And I got to say, I think that's criminally wrong.
And I'm sure that she's not the only one in that boat.
Yep. All right. Stepping down off the soapbox so I can sit back in my chair. Our next caller is Anna from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Anna. Oh, you actually talked to the folks at Frontier.
Yeah, I did. I right after I heard you guys talking about it, I called Frontier. The real life help she was really nice and really tried to help me, but she hadn't heard about this at all. And she said she's had several calls this morning of people who've heard about it on the radio.
Good.
So, but I also couldn't find it on their website to tell them. I know that you said it was in a press release, but I couldn't find the press release.
It's in their terms of use.
Oh, okay, terms of use.
And it's just one line that says, essentially, there's a 5 gigabyte cap.
Well, it starts out by saying you get free 5 gigabytes of bandwidth, and then there's a sublink.
How is it free if you're paying a monthly fee?
Well, it's free.
That's what I don't understand.
It's free for your monthly fee.
Well, right. There's no extra charge
for it. Right.
Well, she didn't know anything about it, and my point to her was that I just renewed our contract. Our 1 year had just expired, and I just renewed it for 1 year. And so my question to her was, am I grandfathered in? Because if not, I feel like that's kind of a breach of the contract.
Well, in the fine print of the contract says they can change the contract whenever they want.
Yeah, it does.
So anyway, she's going to be trying to find out about it and give me a call.
Well, and that's what we're hearing from a lot of people in the forums and at stopthecap.com, that you call back and you'll get someone else that will give you a different story. They don't know yet. The Frontier Corporate hasn't told their customer service people yet about any of this.
Right. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Rake, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 39 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. You need to put up a link to stopthecap.com.
That is.
Because it's great.
Yeah.
Because it's great.
Yep.
All right.
Stopthecap.com.
Stopthecap.com. Our next caller is Mary Beth from Victor, New York. Welcome, Mary Beth. What's your question?
Well, it's actually a very general question. I have a student going off to college, and he needs a laptop.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really well versed on too much about them. Basically, I'd like to know what my best bet is on getting one. Should I call and order one? Should I go to electronic stores?
Right. Hold on a second. Where is she going to school?
Yeah.
going to Niagara.
Okay, because I'm the systems administrator for the E. Philip Saunders College of Business at the Rochester Institute of Technology, and I get this question a lot.
We sell computers, get this question a lot, too.
Yeah. Here's, from the non-biased point of view, here's the answer. First, she should make contact with the college or department that she's going to be in. And ask
We've already done that.
Yeah, most of them give you a list. Yeah.
General guidelines on how much memory, how many gigabytes, and Home Vista, and that's all they said.
Home Vista, they say.
Yeah.
All right, so that cuts you out of a Linux machine or a Mac machine. Now the
not necessarily. That cuts you out of a decent computer if you have to run Vista.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Well, now what
I'd still say
what
XP.
Is she going for?
Sports administration.
I'm sorry, what?
Sports management administration.
Sports management. So they may have some specific programs they want her to run that will only run on a Windows platform. She needs to make contact with them and find out if that's the case.
Okay.
Or if it's just you need a spreadsheet. You need a word processor that saves things in the Word format, the doc format.
Well, they want them to have the Office, you know, Microsoft Office for students.
Right, right. But is that shorthand for we need you to have a spreadsheet that saves in an Excel format?
Right, you don't have to buy Microsoft Office to be able to read and write Microsoft Word files.
Right.
Okay.
But check to find out if that's the case.
And I was going to say, from the school, probably, she can get better deals on the software.
Well, that's what I was about to say. From the school itself, now check to see whether or not their bookstore has deals on hardware and software.
They have an affiliation with Gov Connection.
Yep.
And I've contacted them, and they can offer me a Toshiba with a 3-year warranty.
See, the warranty, particularly on a laptop, is very, very important.
Yes.
That's what I thought.
Find out what it would cost to get a 4-year warranty if she's going to a 4-year school. And make sure that it's an on-site warranty.
Because laptop is usually dispatched.
If it's a dispatch warranty, that means she will be without that laptop for the amount of time it takes them to fix it. Now, if that's the case, then she has to know what their guarantee is on the amount of time they will have that laptop.
Turnaround time.
Right.
Okay. So if you were to go to, say, an electronics store and purchase one, you normally get just a 1-year limited warranty.
Right.
You can purchase more, but the question is, who is that warranty with? And how long will they guarantee? What is the shortest time they will guarantee they have your machine?
Okay.
And, you know, because a lot of them don't guarantee anything in that sense.
Okay.
And a lot of them will tell you one thing and then deliver another when it comes time to pony
up.
Yeah,
but if it's on paper, you can sue them.
Yeah, but the thing that is, though, is with her getting it through the school, here's the advantage. It's right there, so she doesn't have to. If you buy it here and she's way in Niagara Falls and something happens, she's got to come all the way here, especially with the price of gas, or you got to go get it, come all the way back, drop it off, send it out, get it fixed, which probably goes somewhere else. You got to drive there then. Then you got to go pick it up, come back, make arrangements then to drive back out to her school to get it there and all this gas versus doing it right there at school.
And seeing if her school might have their own repair department. A lot of the bigger schools do.
A lot of the bigger schools do. And in addition, at the very least, they should have some technical support available for machines you have purchased there. So in general, if someone is going to school in an out-of-town situation, and not even out of state, but just out of town, they are much better off buying the machine at the school if they offer it, and in addition, getting the support from them, and at the very least, 3 years of maintenance and better four.
And that's usually the issue we see with these recommendations, where they're recommending Vista and Microsoft Office, is the help. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm running OpenOffice on my BSD machine, I can do exactly the same thing, but I can't call their help desk with a question because they only know Vista and they only know Microsoft Office.
Mm-hmm.
So that ends up being a big issue there as well.
Okay, well, thanks for your help.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how much help we were.
Yeah.
Well, I know the right questions to ask.
Yeah.
There you go. That's the start.
We actually got screwed by Apple. Apple is offering a free iPod to college freshmen when you buy a computer.
Nice.
So we figured, since most people already have iPods, we're giving away a free TV when you buy a computer in our package. And you can use that as a second monitor on your laptop.
Right.
And that's Jesse Group, 924-1920.
All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 49 minutes after the hour, Soundbites 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
At 53 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Our next caller is Marcy from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Marcy. What's your question?
Hi. If I thought I could take my computer in someplace and get it fixed, I would, but I have problems with my laptop talking to my desktop. Although I can get in, I'm getting weird messages. Event ID 4321 and 8019. Does these make sense? I printed it out in the document, but, you know, this is shorthand.
Are you wired or wireless?
The desktop is wired. My laptop is wireless.
Okay. Then, now, was it the network wirelessly connecting before?
Yeah, well, see, I attempted at one point to actually set it up so my laptop could actually go on to my desktop and I could share there so my kids can work the,
can
the
both
big one while I do this with a laptop and then even print over.
Can both machines get to the internet?
Oh, yeah.
It's just a file sharing problem.
Yeah, it's in setting it up in the file sharing. What you might want to, a couple basic things is, first one, make sure you're both in the same work group. If you go into...
Well, yeah, I went up to, like, I went online to that Gigaset Router Management, DSL, and they're all there. They're all showing up. I mean,
No. You got to be in the same work group name.
Yeah, within your computer, if you go into the control panel, click on system, and it'll show you your work group name.
Yeah, your computer name and your work group name.
And under system, let's see, I'm clicking on it right now, and you go under computer name, you got to make sure... One, your computer name is two different ones, but they're all of the same work group.
So the computer name on both has to be different, but the work group name on both has to be the same.
And then you got to set up the C drive, say, or the particular folders you want on the desktop to be shared.
You're just doing specific folders, by the way.
Pick a folder you want to share to the network to let other computers see it.
Oh, okay, so I have to make sure that stuff in the shared folder.
Yeah, there's two different shared folders. The shared folder that Windows creates is shared to other users on that one computer.
Right.
You need to separately share a folder.
Create a folder called...
Shared to the network or other users on other computers.
And you put the files in there. And now when you go to connect, now you take a laptop, you say, all right, connect to the desktop. And it'll say, okay, this folder is available. You say, make a link to it. Now, when you click on it, it'll open up just that folder that you dump files in that you literally want to share.
Similarly, and the way you do that is by right-clicking on it and selecting share. Similarly, if you want to share your printer, you have to do much the same thing. Right-click on it, select share this printer, give it a name. And then on the other machine, you point to it either by browsing the internet so you can find it.
Browsing the network.
Or the network so you can find it, which is probably the easiest thing to do. Or by putting /// the name of the desktop, /// the name of the printer that you gave it.
Yeah, so the sharing words that you're seeing are only sharing for files on that one computer. You have to separately share it to other computers. But you can pick the same shared folder to share to your network, which makes it a little more, I guess, convenient.
Yeah.
So you only have one shared folder.
So that's a couple of things to try, you know. If not, give us a call next week.
Good luck.
Yeah, but setting up file sharing between computers is tricky.
Yeah. It's fun.
Right. Our next caller, Charlie from Lima, New York. Charlie, what's your question?
Yeah, great show.
Thanks.
Yeah, Dell 8400, about 3 years old. It has a 3.4 gig.
All right. What seems to be the problem with it?
Okay. When I turn it on, within 2 to 10 minutes, it will give me an error message that it's in an endless loop and needs to shut down.
You might want to check the fans on there and make sure that they're all working, that maybe...
Not caked with dust.
The CPU fan and everything else is actually working.
It sounds like an overheating problem.
Yeah,
it
sounds like an overheating issue.
Get it clean.
That's what you need to do. It's a cleaning error issue. Get it clean, bring it to Dave or Steve and have them clean it out. All right, we are, I'm afraid, done for another week. I want to thank everyone who called in. I want to apologize to all those to whom we did not get. Call earlier and more often. Next Friday at 10 p.m., we will be in Second Life. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, particularly Chris Reich, who comes in here and does all this. Really, he's the sick man and does all this stuff for us. God bless him. Rob Linton, who without a doubt has managed to stand up for an entire 2 hour stretch. I'm Nick Francesco. It's 58 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.